Welcome to the Talent Smart Podcast. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who will offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We want to explore how technology and business can improve and enhance the world. We're always keen to hear from you and let us know what topics you'd like to hear us cover in future episodes. Also, if you'd like to take part, please let us know. We're always looking for interesting and inspiring people to interview. Speak soon. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast series. Really glad to be here with you again. I'm delighted today that we've been joined by Ket Patel, good friend of Talent Smarts, and has been, you know, thankfully he's been a speaker for us a number of times as well. Ket is a change professional consultant with Marlowe Consulting, but also the founder of a relatively new community called Change Reactions. And this is a professional community for change professionals who want to embark on a change career. And I think if you're interested in change, you should check them out. So, Ket, thank you so much for agreeing to be with us. Again, I really appreciate you giving us some time. So,
cheers, Phil.
Get started. Change Reactions. Just give us a little bit of, because there'll be people out there who want to get into change. And, you know, this sounds like a great opportunity for them. What is Change Reactions?
Yeah, it's come from just like reflecting back on my own experiences. I didn't even know change management was a thing when I started out. I sort of fell into operations, then went into projects. Then actually my boss at the time, 15 plus years ago, just said this throwaway comment to me, which was, you'd be a really good change agent. And I went, what's that? And I started just went looking around and I started to recognize that there was this actual role that appeared to be missing from a lot of projects, which is sort of just creating the right conversations to help people move and accept a level of change, as opposed to kind of just, here's a bit of training, or by the way, this new change is coming. There's a bit more to it than that. And so what did that entail? And that was a long sort of meandering journey into learning about change management and wanting to do more of this work and eventually getting sort of fully into it as a business change consultant. But what the community is why should it take 15 years for someone like me to realize there is this professional community, there is this profession that is focused on helping organizations get their people through change. It's not just about projects, it's not just about business analysis. There is a psychological aspect of getting people to move from where they are now and the behaviors they have to another way. And actually there's some really talented people coming out of university that aren't necessarily being attracted to this profession because they don't know it exists. So the Change Reactions is one example of helping sort of young professionals, but it's also helping career changers. We're getting a lot of people moving from, you know, HR, business analysis, project management into change roles. And actually, it's really difficult to make that transition. So the idea is to help ease that transition into and make more people aware of this profession and see if they're excited by it and get into it.
Oh, that's brilliant. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because one of the things I wanted to discuss was previously you and I had a chat. And this idea of sort of, well, the word turned out there about career agility. But you mentioned a term to me, which I was keen to explore today. It's organizational agility. Now, when you first said it, now you and I have had a discussion, but for the purposes of people watching here today, what is organizational agility?
Well, you know, like I think it's been talked about a lot, but I think what interests me about it is that when it gets talked about, it feels like it's very process. It's very, how do we carve up all the work we need to do in sort of definable smaller chunks so we can respond to them better, right? And we can kind of be time bound around it. So it's that sort of being agile and responsive to little changes in what's coming our way is sort of how it gets played. But again, the process is sort of only one part of it. And so when I think of organizational agility, I look back over what's happened in the pandemic. I kind of think of how does an organization, which is essentially a collection of people, all turn and adapt or respond to a change in a way that they all move forward together. And I think, you know, the reason I've been playing around with this idea quite a lot is just looking at what happened to organizations in the pandemic. And using this idea that when we forced everybody to go home and we needed everyone to work remotely for a protracted period of time, we responded in a way that allowed everybody to explore that and make it work. if we tried to do that, and you know, many places have said this, like if we tried to do that in any other environment, you know, in a standard, if a single business tried to do that while all other businesses were operating normally, it wouldn't work.
Right.
So there was something in this that is, what is an agile organization? Well, it's that when faced with something that must be addressed, the whole organization can all of a sudden turn their attention and focus to it, deal with it, and then seamlessly move back into an operating way of working, which is probably more business as usual. So I wouldn't necessarily call it agility either. I'd probably think of it more as adaptability. So I know we used the word agility at the time, but yeah, I've been thinking more about that organizational adaptability. How do you recognize a sort of external force, all make sense of it as an organization, and then adapt to it appropriately and then move forward? That to me is a really powerful idea. And I think one organizations are trying to get to, but are actually tackling it from a process perspective, which is missing a huge part of the equation, which is, you know, it's a collection of people.
Yes. And in terms, do you think in many ways the pandemic was a blueprint for how organizations can be adaptable? Because as you rightly point out, we were forced to adapt, and organizations, many of whom were maybe stuck in their ways, had to adapt and come out the other side of it going, actually, we've got an awful lot more flexibility in the workforce, and everyone's working, you know, nobody went off on the golf course. They actually stayed working despite working from home. Mm. And maybe it eradicated some of those older ideas, perhaps.
I think it created an opportunity to see that was possible. And I think what we're seeing now is how many people felt they lost some level of control over the organization, which they feel they need to have, and they want back, even if they saw that there was a benefit to this sort of adaptability that was demonstrated. It's still uncomfortable for the people that run the organization. Therefore, they want to go back to that other way, which, you know, is completely acceptable if that's the way they want to run businesses. But I think what is a struggle right now is people forget what was learned in that quite quickly when you get back into doing your day to day. And actually, it's easy probably to poke holes when you're probably missing, you know, you're missing certain aspects of things you expect to happen.
Right.
So yeah, I don't think everybody's learned. I think everybody could observed that it could happen, that this organizational agility was about giving people the time and space to deal with something everybody was experiencing at the same time, which is uncharacteristic of most change, right?
Yes.
Most changes in organizations get trickled down, big idea, next level down, next level down, next level down over a period of time. And that in itself is quite challenging, because that top level are much, much more comfortable by the time it gets a couple of levels down, right?
Right.
So it could look like resistance, whereas it's just a disconnect between time. But in the pandemic, everybody unanimously went home. Whatever level you were at in an organization, you all went home and had to figure out how to work, how to use teams, use technology, get your teams operating. So there was a sort of bringing together from that common, facing it at a common place. And that's what is missing in when you go back to business as usual now in businesses. When you're trying to implement change, you've got that trickle down of an idea, as opposed to, hey, we're all doing this now, tomorrow, or whenever, and then let's figure it out. And I think that's the uncomfortable bit, is that trying to unleash a change unanimously across the organization is just, it feels too disruptive. People don't want to take that risk. And that's where the pushback, I think, comes.
And how would an organization go about assessing their appetite for agility or adaptability? How do they go about assessing their, you know, their where they are? You know, because the old saying, if you want to start a journey, you have to decide, you know, to look on the map and figure out where you are first. So how do they go about doing that? Is there tools, techniques, or is there ways of working, or they can assessment tools, or?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because I do think there's a lot being done at the moment with, you know, harnessing feedback from employees through, you know, through engagement surveys and things like that, to get a sense of how people feel about the way organizations deliver change. And that gives you a good idea about how open people are to it. But I don't think there's anything at the moment I've seen, and to be fair, I'm only still exploring how to assess organizational adaptability in the first place. I don't think there's anything that kind of says, here's a sort of yardstick of what organizational agility could look like. So there's no, from what I've seen, there's no maturity matrix or, you know, framework that says, here's level zero of organizational maturity to here's level, you know, 10. But I do think there is already some really good data about how comfortable your organization is in navigating change. But it often comes down to, you know, things like the employee survey is a really good example. And what often is done by most change practitioners is when you deliver a project, you kind of go and do some of that individual one-to-one kind of discussions, and you get a sense of people that are part of your stakeholder group, where that level of comfort is and what levels of pressure there are. So I think that's, there's sort of like the existing data that we get on people kind of through annual assessments. And then I think the other aspect of it is sort of doing more pointed ones around the specific changes people are doing to kind of get a sense of where people are at. And I do think one of the other things about being adaptable is knowing how much change you've got going on at the moment. So, you know, I think an area where organizations can understand what capacity they have for change is by looking at how much change they're doing already at a holistic level. Very few organizations do that with a change focus. For instance, do I have a heat map of all the projects I have and all the teams I'm impacted? That's a really, really powerful tool to kind of understand what level of fatigue your organization might be facing, right, therefore kind of eroding any ability to be adaptable in the face of something you weren't planning. So there's lots of things that people can do, but I don't think anyone's ever sort of brought them together as a way of thinking about assessing organizational readiness for adaptation. And that for me is sort of an area to explore further.
Okay. And if you were going into an organization, so there's people watching here and they don't know the organization's, you know, appetite for change, and but they have this desire to be this adaptable, agile organization. What's the starting point? What advice would you give them if they're, you know, they're sat watching this now and you think, right, if you want to check out your company and see how agile or adaptable you are, do these few things. Obviously, you mentioned about, you know, surveys, etc. But is there anything else they can do?
Well, I mean, I really do think that heat map, understanding what you've got going on in your organization across the different groups impacted, it's a really good starting point. And actually it's quite telling, right? Because we talk a lot about whether change fatigue exists. And it's a, I think it's a tricky one, because fatigue, like you imagine a runner, right? Like a runner runs, you definitely experience fatigue. You ask a runner to go, unless you're Forrest Gump, run all day, every day, you're going to experience fatigue at some point. And that fatigue is overuse of, you know, your body in a certain way. I think the same is absolutely true in organizations. But if you also think about the analogy of, like, if I run with music, I know I can push myself that little bit harder. I can get a little bit more out of myself. So fatigue can be pushed, but it's about creating the environment for people to kind of push themselves and motivate them and align them to things. And so where a heat map is really useful is understanding where you're over-pressuring certain business areas and actually recognizing it, not just for yourself, but also to the business as a whole. And all of a sudden, it creates a level of trust between you and the employees you're expecting to change. And actually, that allows you to create a little bit more capacity in people. And, right. And it's a really bizarre, like you hear this term of sort of discretionary effort is the term you would use, right? Like, how much more effort am I willing to put in above my day-to-day in order for some return on my, you know, on that investment in time? And actually, projects are largely run from a business change perspective on discretionary effort. You're asking your organization, you know, your frontline employees, please carry on doing all your operational tasks. But also, if you don't mind, please could you take on this new change we want you to do, right? Learn that, but don't let anything in operations break, right? Generally, it just doesn't add up, right? But it can when you recognize that you're asking more of people and you need them to commit time. And actually, you're really cognizant that we're doing all these other things as well. And sometimes we're doing too much to certain people. And we need to kind of be mindful and quite supportive of those people beyond just, you know, here's the next thing that's coming, or transparency. So I think that heat map's really important. I mean, it's such an easy thing to do because the information's there in your organization. How many projects are you running? What groups are they hitting? And how many times are we doing it? Where does the same group keep coming up? It's a great insight to what your organization is challenged by. Then the next step is, let's go speak to them. Let's go and recognize, by the way, we know we've sort of planned this poorly now, thinking about it, because we've hit you five times in the space of 3 months where you're really busy. Hey, we're going to try and manage the risk here. Let's see what we can do about the impact it has on you. But when you start to have conversations around the fact you need people to do stuff, all of a sudden it creates that level of additional capacity in people sometimes that they're willing to go, okay, they get it. They've planned poorly this time. They'll do it better in the future. The heat map's really useful to see. I think it's creating that space for a dialogue between what we'd like as an organization to happen and what we need our people to do to make it happen. So that for me is kind of key. That it's been really powerful. Every time I've kind of put it in front of an organization, they've almost gone, God, I didn't actually realize that team having so many changes thrown at them.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I know you're really passionate about as well. We've talked before, this whole area of building resilience in the workplace. So, you know, you've created this adaptability and change and within the organization. What do you mean by people resilience? So can we just explore that for a minute? Because I know it's something you're very, very keen on and something we've talked before about.
Yeah, I think of resilience as sort of that, you know, someone kind of tapping you on the shoulder, right? And it becoming annoying, right? And then you're kind of sitting there going, why are they tapping me? And it's that ability to not react, but to process and create the space for you to think about a response. Okay. The natural thing is, get off. But the reality is, let me just step away because it's really annoying. Right, the ability to use resilience for me is about the being able to respond to something instead of just reacting. So it's that control of emotion. But sometimes that, you know, like, again, coming back to fatigue, if there's a lot of things going on, actually that ability to be resilient in that point in time is quite short, because there's just too many things going on and one more thing has kind of tipped over. So what also needs to come with resilience, if you think of resilience in that term, is your ability to kind of take things on without reacting and more responding to them. What comes with it is that you can't always do that, because there'll always be more stimulus than there is for you, the space for you to cope with them. So I think the other bit is being reflective. When those situations where resilience breaks down, is stepping away and going, why did that end up happening? What can I do differently to avoid a situation where I had one too many things for me to think about? And I think there's a really tight relationship between building individual resilience and being really reflective about the times you aren't resilient, the times you haven't been able to be, to reinforce a level of resilience in yourself. I get asked a lot about how do you build resilience, and I don't think there's a course. I'm not 100% sure that you can go on a course and learn in a couple of days how to become more resilient. You can have principles. And the one principle I say is, the times you aren't, look deeply at what caused that tip for you to react as opposed to respond. I'll give you a really basic example. Like, I'm a nut about customer service. I don't think it's difficult to get right. Mm. When it goes wrong, I know I can get frustrated really easily, because I do think it doesn't have to be hard. But I have to work really hard to not aim my focus at the person who's talking to me, because I know an organization has put a process in, well-intentioned. That person is probably just doing the process they've been asked to do. They haven't got the autonomy necessarily to go beyond that process. They have to escalate. So me getting angry at them is not going to make this work any better. But I've learned that over time and through the work I do as well. So I have to really be conscious. I have to be really focused on the fact that, you know, step aside for a moment and let's see how you can make this more productive, as opposed to be responsive to it, as opposed to I'm frustrated, I'm going to let you know. And I think that's where it's like you can't have resilience without being reflective. I genuinely like, and you can't do it in one day. It's got to be about constantly looking at where you were frustrated, where you were annoyed, where things didn't go the way you expected, and looking at what you could do differently if that situation were to occur, and then trying it, right, the next time it happens.
That's sort of backed up, you know, Daniel Kahneman, his twin brain system, or Dr. Stephen Peters, the chimp paradox.
Yeah.
Controlling that within our brain, as you rightly say, it's about, you know, there's reacting, or there's, you know, responding. And so many of us, I mean, I'm with you on the customer service thing. It's something that it hits me a lot. But it's, it, I suppose, in terms of...
Phil, can I just say, the kind of idea around reacting and responding, just be really like, one thing for me is that I cannot avoid sometimes that I will react to stuff. And so the chimp paradox, my brain is, you know, gonna at some point, it's gonna fire and I'm gonna get frustrated. The more important thing is recognizing that that happened. Yeah. And being reflective. And I don't think many books or, you know, authors talk about, hey, it's totally natural that these things happen. Don't try and avoid them. When they do happen, look at why it happened and then look at what you could do differently next time. That's the bit that's often missing, is the reflective bit around the issue. The reaction tells you something, but not many people stop to look and tell us what it tells us. And that for me is the powerful bit about building resilience.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's like a, I don't know, the reflective learning, if there's such a term. Like something that'd be really powerful, and something that I think there may be there could be a book in it there for you, Kat. You know, just let's see.
Oh, don't start that. maybe.
But look, thank you so much for your time. That's the end of this episode one. I know you're kindly going to, you know, stay with us and record episode two as well, which will release in future days. It's been an absolute pleasure. So if people want to look up Change Reactions, Kat, where do they find you?
You can go to www.change-reactions.co.uk and you can find us. The website is just literally about to launch. So we're there. You can find us on LinkedIn as well. You can connect with me. We'll be doing quite a lot over the course of the first part of 2023 about getting it live and getting people attracted to it and sort of meeting their needs. So yeah, now's the time to get involved if you're interested.
Great stuff. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
And looking forward. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the Talent Smart podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We're always keen to hear your feedback. Please let us know your thoughts and what episodes and what topics you'd like to hear us cover in the future. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We're keen to hear from you. Please let us know your thoughts and if you'd like to take part in future episodes.